Dirt and Sprague.
Ronald Acuña Jr. with a grand slam over the monster. He had been slumping. He had been fighting himself. This was crushed.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
San Antonio has it. Johnson to Castle, right wing. Stephon puts it on the deck, drives inside the arc. No look at the rim where Wemby, with one big hand, throws it down.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Hello, hello, hello. Happy Friday, everybody. How we doing? How we feeling out there? Good morning.
Good morning.
You sexy little beast.
Thank you.
Survivor Swag. That's what they're calling you now.
Oh.
That's the new nickname.
Survivor Swag?
Yeah. So every once in a while you get
Destiny's Child.
You get a little crossover. And yesterday afternoon, I had a super busy day. It was one of those, like, I didn't feel like I got to my house until 5 p.m. So given that I was here at 5 a.m.,
yes,
getting at 5 p.m.
I understand. I made like pit stops at my house all day.
And those days are weird, isn't it?
It's like you're in and out. I dropped stuff off. I grabbed other stuff. Yep. I changed shoes or changed shirts and out of there.
And then you're right out of there. I had a very similar day. I had a lot of things, a lot of obligations. And so I had somebody reach out and tell me that they had, I guess on primetime, talked about the show Survivor.
Yeah, they're doing a casting call this weekend or next weekend coming up.
Right.
I was actually listening. It was the In the News.
In the News. Okay.
World famous In the News segment with noted newsman Isaac E. Rott.
Well, if you're telling me about the casting call, that sounds like newsworthy item.
Yeah.
And so somebody said they're picking against you on primetime with Survivor, and I was so confused. I'm like, what?
That's a wise statement.
So I bring up the log because I saw what time the listener had messaged me. I was curious, you know? And so I went and listened to it, and I got a chuckle out of it because they were talking about who on the Fan could win Survivor. And I love Stevie Brackett's instantly going, Sprague. And I was like, whoa, what does that mean? You know, he said so quickly. And then they started debating who could do it. And Rob thought Danny. Sukanik went deathly silent on that answer. And then I thought they were going to move on. They kept talking about it. And then people were texting in you. And then Sukanik says, yeah, I kind of agree with that. And then they talked about you doing it versus like me doing it. And then Sukanik was like, Danny would not win. He would lose big time really quickly. But I was thinking about this. One, I think you are the right pick. But two, and I hate to admit this, I have never watched an entire one episode of the show Survivor.
I haven't either.
You've never watched it?
No.
I don't even really understand how the game is played. In fact,
there's two aspects of it.
It's a manipulation aspect, right?
There is the mental, conniving, backstabbing, forming pacts and this, that, and the other thing. Then there's the physical, everything you got to do.
Yeah. So I didn't really know how to feel about hearing
my name. I
would
not fare well with all the physical things that you would have to do.
But, like, what are the physical things? Are you carrying buckets of water? I've never really watched the show.
No,
it's been on for 30 years, I think, and I've never really
watched it. I was always more of an Amazing Race guy.
I've seen an Amazing Race episode.
Because you sort of have to figure out, you know, it's international, you're flying all over the place. There's a lot more, like, strategy involved in things. There's still physical tasks that you have to do.
I briefly dated a girl in college who said one of her dreams was to be on the Amazing Race.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
If she's,
plus, it's a team. You'd have a partner of some, you know, whether it's your significant other, whether it's a buddy or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was really thinking, like, how should I feel about this? Because in my mind, and I don't know why I feel this way other than just hearing the name and seeing where they're at usually, I was, like, thinking, is it like the show Alone, where you're in the woods, you need to survive? I don't actually have ever really known how the show operates. And I responded with, right choice, I wouldn't last a day. I'm a city boy candy ass, basically. And then I went and listened to it, and it was like, you got to be likable, but you also need to be conniving and backstabbing. And I went, you know what? I think Survivor Swag is actually the pick. I think you're perfect for it. You could easily fit in and be likable, and you could be the same guy who like says something complimentary, and then they cut to your one-on-one with the camera, and you're like, I never intended to do that. And you're like conniving and you're stabbing him in the back.
If I was to actually get on the show, or I wanted to be on the show, went down and was serious about it, yeah, I would be stabbing people in the back left and right.
In fact,
reason to go on the show is to win.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Unless you're trying to build a brand.
I've been on the air for 23 years. I'm like, the novelty of being on TV or whatever is lost on me. It's like, all right.
Yeah, I don't want to be offensive here. I think the Survivor audience would boost your brand just a little.
No, I'm not saying it would, but the allure of, I'm on TV. Yeah,
whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
If I was going to be on it, the goal would be to try to win and get the $1 million or whatever they're paying out now.
Do we hate the winners of the shows? I was trying to think of that, too. I randomly brought up Survivor a couple weeks ago, and it was like the only one
I feel like every
10
years they do some Survivor like fan favorites. Like they bring back the ones that were the biggest villains and the most liked. And
but do we root for, like, do we like the winners, or are we finding them to be the biggest manipulators, so we kind of hate them?
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea either. I've never seen the show. It's like, of all the things that have been on network television,
yeah,
I don't even know if it's a shamefully thing. It's one of those, it's been on my whole life, and I've never actually watched an episode.
Yeah.
Not a season, an episode. I've seen 10 minutes of an episode, and I'm like,
yeah,
what's happening
little bites here or there. Or
yeah,
whatever,
it's like, whatever, you know, yeah. It's never really interested me. I'm more into the actual, like, drop a person in the middle of nowhere and see if they survive.
Oh, Naked and Afraid? You're more Naked and Afraid, or the Bear Grylls thing? Or
Bear Grylls is a good one. Yeah. I really do like the Alone show. You can find all those seasons on Netflix. I think it's a Discovery Channel show, and it's like actual surviving in the wild people. That show I get into, Survivor, is like a reality-based, you know, they're usually staying on, they call it an island, but it feels like it's kind of a resort that they try to make look like an island. I'm speaking out of pocket there, but I do think they're right. I think it's you. And I'm not even really sure who would be a close second on the fan of, like, actually pushing and winning the way you would. Because I don't think Danny would win. I think Danny would be a quick exit.
People would, yeah. I think everybody would want him off.
Patrick's way too much of a pushover. He'd participate in the gossip, but he's way too much of a pushover.
Yeah, Patrick would hang around for a while.
I don't know if he would.
I don't know I forget if you do like the challenge, like all those challenges, like if you lose one, you're automatically off, or you still have to be
versus the
voted
vote
off the island.
Now that's the game where they douse your lantern, right? Isn't that what they do?
Yeah. Yeah. You have your tiki torch.
Yeah. Your tiki torch.
Yeah.
See, cause Patrick is a good example of, we have a water cooler in here, and it started off of everybody taking a rotational turn of bringing in a water once the water's out.
Right.
Well, once Rob got the first two and the water cooler established, he was done. Like, he was just, it was over for him. I participated twice, and largely nobody else was doing it, and then Patrick became the water bitch.
Oh.
So I think because he was reluctantly getting water, it makes me think that he falls into the honeybee trap of the Survivor games, and I think he gets eliminated pretty quickly. Dirt, no chance. Although he's actually a sneaky good one.
He would be, because he's petty.
He's very quietly petty.
He's very quietly petty. He doesn't overtly come out and get in people's faces.
He loves to laugh at a lot of stuff that's not always funny for people. Yeah, he's quietly petty. People don't realize how many media members he hates in our market. And he keeps that to himself, and I'm the only one who knows. He'll make comments and he'll say, man, I really don't like so-and-so. And I'm like, what? Why don't you like them? Yeah, did you see this video? Yeah, I saw that video. Hey, get out of here. And I'm like, really? It'll just shock me all the time with who he doesn't like. So I think he'd probably be my second pick of everybody at the fan. And then after that, it's like, he goes, Canik, I don't know. I'd have no chance at this game. Rob would quit.
See, most of us are just
Dusty's
our interest.
Dusty's too nice.
See, I think Dusty would do okay.
Well, I'm not saying we wouldn't play the game if we were involved in the game. I'm just trying to say, like, can you last long enough to win the game? And I think you are. I think you're far and away the best choice for this. I think you'd be perfect for
it. I don't know if I'm flattered or offended.
I think you should be flattered.
Okay.
My takeaway is be flattered because people, like, really think you'd play a game really well, one.
If I'm going to be involved in the game, then yes, I am trying to win the game.
Do you do that when you play, like, party games?
Yes.
Oh, you're like a really super serious, like, charades guy, aren't you?
I suck at charades, so I try at all costs to avoid charades.
Man.
But Trivial Pursuit. Mm.
Trivial Pursuit? You're playing Trivial Pursuit at your party games?
Not now, but that was very popular.
Yeah.
So.
Super serious game guy, huh?
I'm trying to win.
Really?
If you're going to sit me down playing cards, you know, whatever the case may be.
Cards is different. That's not a game. That's like that's a competition cards.
Well, even if you're just, I'm not talking about playing like when we get together for like poker.
Like
where,
Uno. Are you super serious Uno guy?
Yeah, I'm trying to win.
Oh, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't really know what it'd look like to not try to win.
Yeah.
But you're kind of locked in, not laughing, having fun?
Because
Uno, I can have a ton of fun while dropping a draw four on your ass.
I tend to focus. If I'm going to play, I will focus. I can have another conversation about life or whatever else is going on, but
focusing super hard, saying I tend to focus when talking about Uno of all the games is a hilarious statement.
I don't mind making six-year-olds cry.
I played a Uno game once where one of my cousins, she left for the restroom, and it basically turned into, she's like, you don't have to wait for me, just like, you guys can start. And weirdly, what we did is we ended up flipping her hand over. Because when my family plays Uno, we play it like the real official way. When you play like 8, 9, 10 deep, you got to keep score.
Yeah.
So we're doing the score keeping of Uno and not just like a random one-off. She left and we played her hand. And now we played it honestly. Like if we had her hand, how would we play it is basically what we did. She ended up winning the game.
Wow.
It's one of the more embarrassing losses of my life. Somebody beat us in Uno that wasn't actually present. Yeah, they weren't even around. And it was a quick game. Her hand won in like 3 minutes. I was like, "What just happened here? How did this transpire?" So, I'm very familiar with the Uno seriousness, but I don't know how locked in I really am doing it all. Got a good show today.
Yeah, look at you. Thank you. I was busy between hops and dad in the hospital.
Well, I mean, I knew that was going to be the case. I'm not even talking about guests. Like, I'm excited for the guests. We have 3 guests today.
I know.
We've loaded up on the top of every hour. We got Mike Doc Parker at 7.
Yes.
And then we've got Mr. Move the Team himself, Bill Orem. People have weirdly, like, hold this man accountable. And I'm like, I just think he's talking about it too much. I don't really think he's saying anything controversial, is he? I guess he's kind of teasing. He thinks the team's leaving, and I don't think that's going
to
happen.
So many things have to happen before you get me to the point where I am actually considering.
There's like 6 things that need to happen for me to even entertain the idea of
exactly.
It. So he'll join us coming up at 8 a.m. The Blazers made the headlines yesterday, and then Nick Krupke is going to join us at 9. It's Caitlin Clark Mania Weekend here.
Yes.
She was god awful last night in the Valkyrie game. We watched that game because that game 6 was
terrible.
Are you
starting to understand what I'm saying? I'd take Aaliyah Boston before I took Caitlin Clark if I was putting a team together?
No, I'd probably take Mitchell before I'd take Clark.
Oh, okay.
A little more so than Boston. Boston had a couple of really bad late game moments, but she's a good player.
Yeah.
I'd still take Paige Bueckers over any of them.
Me too.
If you're talking
about ticket, like the game I would have circled that I would most want to go see with the Fire.
I've already circled both times that she's here.
I wanted to see the Liberty, but yeah. Sabrina was out and they weren't full squad. So
yeah,
it's the Wings.
It's the Wings, and they're here twice. They're here in June and they're here in July.
And
I'm going to go to one of those games.
I think I'm back in July. I'm hoping that July game is after I get back.
It's like July 13th.
I should be back. Yeah,
I think. I looked at the schedule last night because I was curious.
Because Fudd and Beckers.
Shepard.
Yeah.
Jessica Shepard was a beast last night. She was 20-20 and 10?
like 22-20-12 or something.
Yeah, that's what it was. Her line was nuts. They beat the Aces. That was a good game to watch. But Clark wasn't very good, but it's Caitlin Clark mania weekend here in Portland. It's funny. I had another media member reach out to me about midway through the third quarter, and they go, "Hey, you want fire tickets Saturday for $40 each?" And I was like,
"Where are they?"
No, well, the price tag makes me think they're not the most amazing seats, but the counter is you have to miss game 7 to go to that game. And
yeah.
Caitlin Clark is certainly something.
There's always DVR. Because the Hops game is at 5 o'clock on Saturday.
See, that's different, though.
It's work.
You signed up for work.
Right.
That's a job. Like,
right.
If you had a choice, are you watching Wimby Thunder game 7 or going to the Fire game? You certainly can record one versus not getting the experience of the other.
Well, we know what the internet would say about me.
Yes, we do. You'll never watch the game. It'll get ruined, and you'll pretend that you watched it. I mean, the internet. You mean actual reality of what happened? No, but it's the only game that Caitlin Clark's coming to Portland this year.
Yes.
Because they have the league, the way the schedule is made up, is you only get to get one of those players once a year. So you miss that game or you watch game 7, and I think there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, supporting the Fire, rooting for the Fire, but they're also big sports fans in general, and they're going to choose to watch game 7, even though it's Caitlin Clark. The building's going to be full. People in Portland are definitely going to pack that arena.
I'll be curious to see if that ends up being an actual full-on sellout.
Third deck, and
it's a Saturday and all that sort of stuff.
Because right now,
because what they get for the opener, what was the announced attendance?
19,000. Yeah.
Capacity's just over 20?
No, I think it's 19,800 or 20,000.
So it was
100.
Just about sold out.
It was just about like actual seat all the way sold out. They've done a good job, but it's been very sparse in the 300 section for most of these games.
See, I'd be more interested in going tonight, seeing the Dream.
That's the game I think we might be trying to go to. A little easier for us to get the tickets to that one, whereas the Caitlin Clark game is like the number one. These tickets have been given out already. But Caitlin Clark Mania Week is here. So Nick Krupke's going to join us.
There we go. Fire on a 3-game heater. They're a little dinged up. Looking at the injury report.
Well, it's a fascinating week because I know they've hired a new news reporter down at Fox 12.
Ah.
But he's a sports director, so we got all the regional action going on while simultaneously he's got back-to-back Fire games going on the Rose City Network. So we're going to go Parker, Orem, and Krupke 7, 8, and 9 a.m.
Yes.
But Swag, I mentioned it's a pretty fun show today because I left yesterday and I'm like, I wonder if anything's going to come out news-wise, because I was going to get to some NFL OTA stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, some other stops along the NFL way I want to get. And then, lo and behold, college football opened itself up, and one of the best stories in a long time has popped up, and we need to talk about it today.
And I was waiting for this. I mean, it was teed up on a platter.
It was so good.
And, yeah, calling this guy's bluff just makes me happy.
I know Lane Kiffin exists, but I think you can make a very strong argument that Steve Sarkisian's actually the most hated coach in the sport right now. Because at least as much as Lane was going, oh, I left because of racism, definitely not because of money, as much as we don't believe that, Lane Kiffin hasn't been taking shots at multiple programs and stepping in it with his comments of how others run their institutions. Steve Sarkisian's done an exceptional job of that. So Steve Sarkisian stepped in it again, and I cannot wait to talk about this. We got a game 7, the two best words in sports.
Will it live up to it?
Well.
And are you more? Yeah.
The series in general.
The individual games, and especially as we've gotten further into the series.
Minus game 1, this has become.
Yeah, minus 1 was, or game 1 was an all-time classic.
It's phenomenal. It's an all-time classic.
Game 2 was pretty good.
Was it?
Or am I thinking of game 3?
Exactly. No, I didn't think. They're fine. I think the games are fine. But we also have some very bad games in there. So,
oh, the last couple have just been.
Yesterday was okay, and then a 20-0 run happens, and you're like, see you later. This game's over. So we got the two best words in sports. We got a game seven. So it's a loaded show. There's a lot to get to. Three guests, Parker 7, Orem 8, Krupke 9. It's going to be a fun show. Join us along the way. Happy Friday. Let's get it going. We'll start with game 6 and then do a little peekaboo of game 7. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1, The Fan. All right, welcome back in. By the way, raising a good point here, because Saturday is Caitlin Clark Portland Mania. We've got a game 7 in the NBA Western Conference Finals. We potentially stacking Saturday. We got a Civil War baseball game on our hands, too. What a day of sports we could potentially be having.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Where would you rather be?
Well, the weather could be nice.
PK Park, Moda Center, or your couch watching game 7?
God. I'm going to get a lot of crap for this. I'm picking the couch. I can get all three if I want all three.
That's true.
I can get the baseball game.
You can triple cast it if you want.
And then if I want to check in to see how they're doing against Caitlin Clark, you know, she is white. I can do that, and then I can get game 7 and not have to be 2 hours from my house or 45 minutes out of a parking garage. Sadly, I think the answer for me is couch. I get all three. What would you choose? PK Park, huh?
I would.
Yeah. I mean, it's rare. Dirt made a really good point this weekend. I hadn't really put it in my mind of like, we haven't had the rivalry with some steaks with some real juice in it for a minute.
Yeah.
This one's nice, potentially tasty. We'll talk with Mike Doc Parker coming up about that at 7 a.m. Well, felt like we had an okay game 6 going. San Antonio came out like a bat out of hell.
Yeah, halftime, you felt like Wemby had 20 or 22 at halftime.
22 at halftime.
They were only up 7.
They could have cut it to 2 if Williams hits a 3. They extend the lead to 7, and then you're like, okay, it's still only 7.
Yeah, you're like, boy, the Spurs have played great, but they don't have control of this game
yet. The Thunder are not going away quietly, and then the third quarter happened. A 20-0 run in large part, but 32-13 in the third quarter for San Antonio. And look, if you didn't watch much of the fourth quarter, I don't really blame you. Yeah. It was almost 30 points by the end of the third quarter, and that's a lot to overcome for what is already a banged up Thunder team. But Wemby was great in this one. He had 28 points. He had 10 rebounds. He had 3 blocks. He was all over the place. I mean, it's not really crazy to just simply point out that when this dude has a great game, they tend to win it. And that's why we're going to a game 7, is he's got 3 great games. He's got 3 kind of okay games. I thought game 5 was actually pretty bad according to his standards. But Stephon Castle was really good in this one. He had 17. I thought Devin Vassell was really good in this one. I know he only ended up with, 12 points here? But it felt like bigger than 12 points. He made really good defensive plays.
Obviously Wemby and Castle and the guys, I think he's been their biggest X factor in this series overall. Every time I look up, he's pulling up in transition, getting a key 3, grabbing a key offensive rebound,
making
getting
a stop. Yeah. I agree with that. Harper was really good in this one. He had 18 points. He was 6-9 from the field, 6 boards. De'Aaron Fox is just, he's clearly going through a really bad ankle sprain.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the story of game 7, right? It's like, it's something we beg for between great teams and sports, and we got it. But the series after game 1 has not been the most exciting.
No.
You know,
and
down to the wire
hard
stuff.
To live up to that when that's
it is.
Your opener.
A double overtime 40-24 guy going against the defending champions on the road. It is hard to live up to that. But I kind of go into game 7 with more like how much the story has become injuries. And that's the unfortunate nature when you get to
this point. Yeah, Jalen Williams tried to come off the bench
and play a little, and he can't play.
Doesn't look good.
He can barely move. He can't dribble the ball very well. And I think De'Aaron Fox is kind of similar. He doesn't look like himself at all. He can't move the way he wants to move. He's a very shifty, quick player. He's lost that. When you have a really bad ankle situation, if you've ever played basketball in pain, like even standing and shooting.
It's the worst.
It is the worst. And so De'Aaron Fox isn't really much of anything. Jalen Williams isn't much of anything for him. So it's going to boil down to how much does home court matter? Is SGA going to get it going? My God, he was terrible yesterday. I thought they bottled him up really well. And then Wemby. If Wemby's not going to look like Game 5, but more Game 6, Game 1, you know, game four, then that Wimby and the Spurs, I think, are going to win it. But it's just, it's an impossible series, Swag, I find. An impossible series to try to predict what's going to happen in a game seven.
Yeah, and then you throw in the factor of who's going to get a whistle. SGA gets 17 free throw attempts in game five. What do you have, three in game six?
He only had three yesterday. Did you think I thought the whistles were better?
No,
in game
I
six
didn't.
Than five.
I was at the hop, so I had it on my phone. I was glancing at the score.
It didn't feel egregious. They didn't get in the way. I felt game five became the Tony Brothers game.
Yeah.
And I don't like when Tony Brothers makes it a Tony Brothers game.
No, there's a couple of people that, guys in the NBA that like their whistles. Mm-hmm. And when I see them, Scott Foster is one of them.
Yep.
Tony Brothers is one of them. Ed Malloy is another.
Ed Malloy's one. He's got the sick hair part.
And so they like their whistle. And you're going to hear it a lot. So, yeah, I'll go look and see who the assignment. I'm assuming Zach Zarba is going to be on this game. But
Zarba was on yesterday.
Oh, he was on yesterday.
Yeah, so
that's why,
like, a big
Zarba
shift.
Is considered the top NBA referee and has been for the last few years.
Thunder shot 25% from three yesterday.
Well, they can't do that if they want to win this game. That's what forces their ability to have multiple guys hitting threes effectively. That's what forces Wemby from having to decide if he's got to come out, and he can't just sort of hang around the paint and be a one-man zone.
When you get into Game 7 situations in NBA series, and certainly we can be wrong, but you can have a feel. Like, when you get a team that's down 3-1 that pushes it to 7, like, go back to 2016. There were a lot of people that picked Cleveland because they're like, dude, they got all the momentum. It's LeBron. It's a do-or-die game. I'll take that all day. And you had some people picking the Warriors because they were at home and they were a juggernaut that year. When you get Thunder and Warriors in 2016, 3-1 deficit, blown. All right, here you go. When that happens, you can point to a momentum. You can point to something. There is nothing to
There's
point
no
to
momentum.
In this
Every game's been its own thing in this
I
series.
I have no idea. Each team is one on the road.
Yep.
So there's no, like, oh, that's a standalone point for me.
Nope.
Both teams are dealing with injuries. Now, Oklahoma City, in my opinion, a little more than San Antonio, but Fox is a key player.
Yep.
I have no idea what to expect. Wemby's been good, bad, good. So is he due for a bad game, or is he going to, I'm actually a different version of anything you've ever seen. I'm going to give you an all-time Game 7 performance of 30 and 15. Like, right. I don't know what Wemby we're going to see. SGA. Yeah. I think you can make an argument, maybe from an efficiency standpoint, a shooting split standpoint, not so much. But from, like, what I have seen, that was far and away his worst game of the year. And it's not just because it was Game 6. It was like he looked unsure, rushed. I thought they did an exceptional job of, they put these lengthy athletic guys on him that's already tough, and then as soon as he pops in, they're showing to, they're getting the ball at his hands, he's catching grenades. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was his worst game of the year. He just didn't look like himself whatsoever. So, like, what SGA am I going to get? J-Dub, I have no confidence in, but...
And again, they need, you know...
What are you going to get from these guys? I don't know what to do, what to
at
think.
Some, and who is somebody going to come out of their shell? For OKC, Chet, again, Chet needs to be... He has to occupy more attention of the Spurs than he is.
He was
and
a
I know
little
he had a double-double
yeah.
and some other
he
stuff.
He had four offensive rebounds last night.
He has to... his ability to occupy, especially if it's Wemby, if he can occupy Wemby more than he is, that's going to... They talk about this, the gravity analytic now in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have much of a gravitational force in this series.
Well, no. Why
he's
would he be
pull,
concerned about
yeah,
him?
Yeah, he's got to pull guys away from SGA. If Jalen Williams can't go, and there's...
He's averaging 10-8 in this series.
That's not enough.
His numbers on the year are 17-9.
Yeah.
Like, and he's a stellar defensive player. He's got good instincts. He's got good hands. But to go from 17-9 to 10-8 is...
He has to be more prominent. He's got to do one of two things. He either has to start getting to the rim and putting, you know, playing that short porch position, being available, trying to dunk some things, being more of a presence there, or he's got to have a game where he knocks down six or seven threes.
It just feels like he's very unsure of what he wants
exactly.
to do. Like, he's kind of overthinking it, right? Like,
yep.
Great basketball players will tell you that they're not thinking. It's instinct,
no,
it's feel.
They're just going and playing ball. He's just got to play ball.
He's like catching on the wing, open for three, and then like hesitating. Now the closeout's coming, or he's getting blocked by Julian Champagne. Like, that's not confident basketball.
No.
That's a guy that's clearly in his own kitchen.
Yeah. He
has to be a presence in game seven.
He's the guy, if Jalen Williams' leg is not going to cooperate, they can't get Mr. Miyagi to, you know, come give him the magic massage and make it right.
Oh, dude, if I'm Daigneault, I know you want him out there maybe just to be seen. You're not fooling anybody.
No.
I don't think I'd suit him up.
Nobody was
terrible yesterday.
Yeah.
He can't move.
No.
It's one of the worst hamstring tears in NBA history.
Yep.
That happened how long ago? And he still looks like his leg is barely workable. So they certainly miss A.J. Mitchell. They certainly are missing what J-Dub can give them. But they need Caruso to be awesome again. You need Hartenstein to be awesome again. And I think you're right. It's Chet. It's Jalen Williams and SGA. Those are your three biggest names.
Yep.
One of those guys is playing. The other is injured. You got to show up. At a minimum, you got to give me the numbers you're averaging on the year. You got to be one game where you're getting 17 and 10. Give me 17 and 10 in one of these games.
Yeah.
You do that, and the Thunder can play more, maybe a little more relaxed and at home, and the crowd behind them certainly can do it. I said yesterday, we talked about Wemby's game five, and I thought it was terrible to watch what he did in game six. And it's funny because as soon as they lose, it's like, oh, maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder have figured this out. And then, as I've noted, when the Spurs win, it's like, oh, maybe the Spurs have figured them out. There's no feel to the series. And I think that's what makes Game 7 so exciting. It could end up being a dud Game 7, but it's also super exciting to not have any idea who the hell is going to win it.
No, it's up for grabs. Let me see what the – I'm assuming
– I bet you it's Thunder minus 4.5.
3.5.
Oh, I was close. Yeah, it's got to be a short line.
Yeah.
What's the money line bet?
Thunder minus 162, Spurs plus 136.
Oh, let's talk about this on the other side.
Okay.
Do you think, where would you go on that bet and why would you go the side you choose? We'll talk about that. Talk a little game seven, NBA history. The finals are on the line, man. New York is just sitting there waiting. They got a little news yesterday, too, that wasn't great. We'll talk about that. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan. Good morning. Happy Friday, everybody. Hello. We got Mike Doc Parker at 7 a.m.
We haven't talked to Doc for a while.
I looked at my text, so I texted him two nights ago, and he didn't respond, and I was like, huh.
Well, he's a busy guy.
I know, and I don't think he's like Mr. On His Phone All The Time guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's weird. And then during the show yesterday morning, he responded as if I was just texting him, and he's like, hit me later, Doc, and we'll figure out tomorrow. And I was like, oh, I meant like today, tomorrow, but okay. So we worked it out, and I figured out a time for him. But last I had texted him was in November. And you know what the last text I had sent him was? Your line on Yak Yak. Remember we found out they had a Yak Yak on their team, and it was like, Yak Yak, don't talk back or something. And I told him that line, and he loved it. That was the last time I had texted him. So he'll join us at 7. A rare former Duck and current Beav.
I know.
He's going to call out for the Oregon State side, but I'm going to tell you right now, I always wonder how much nostalgia goes through his mind when he goes back to Eugene, Oregon.
Were they playing baseball when he was at Oregon? They might have been.
Well, I don't know, because it went away, but...
Yeah, it went away.
I don't know how long the first iteration of it was.
Killed a wrestling program to bring it back.
Well,
that's
see another team win a national championship. You got to try to match that, right?
Yeah.
So we'll talk with Mike Doc Parker coming up. At 7 a.m., we got local regional stuff starting at noon today, which will be on ESPN Plus and ESPNU, Oregon State, Washington State.
Indeed.
So, Game 7 track records are not amazing right now in the NBA.
My recollection is there's more duds than classics recently.
I'll give you a couple
but
duds
I might,
already.
We've I might have revisionist history there.
Cleveland-Detroit, absolute dud.
Yep.
That was a 30-point beatdown. Cleveland-Toronto was a dud. That was a 12-point victory and ended up not being really close at the end. Detroit-Orlando, talk about a 3-1 blown lead. Detroit came back, and they beat Orlando in Game 7, 116-94. You had Philly and Boston. That was interesting for most of the way. And then Philly ended up pulling away. And then you go to the finals last year. The Halliburton Achilles injury.
It just spoiled everything.
It just sucked the life out of all the fun. Yep. And the Thunder won by 12 and won the title. The semifinals that year, we had OKC and Denver in game 7. That was 125-93.
Yeah.
30-point drubbing.
Yep.
In the first round last year, you had Houston Golden State, and that was not a close game. It was 103-89. Denver and the Clippers, 120-101. You go back to 2024, you had Minnesota and Denver. That was the tale of two halves. The second half, Minnesota just killed them, and they ended up surprisingly winning at Denver. The Pacers beating the Knicks 130-109. And then you had Cleveland, Orlando in 2024 in the first round, 106-94. You certainly have your fair share of duds. It's an overwhelming, the home team usually wins the game seven, yes. Historically speaking, yep. In the association. But I really just, whether you think, like, remember the Dallas-Phoenix series with Luka?
Yeah.
And they ended up going to Phoenix. They won that game. I remember seeing that at the Minneapolis airport. That was an insane game seven, because I'm like, what's happening here? One team just straight quit on their home court.
I know.
And Luka just took everything from them. It's hard to get great game sevens, but when you have a series that's been so back and forth, like, here's something I find interesting. I don't know who's going to win game seven. I find it interesting how both of these teams make the other look so inept when they take turns doing it. Mm-hmm. The Thunder had a season-low 13 points in the third quarter last night. They missed 14 straight field goals and watched the Spurs go on a 20-0 run. No other team in the league can do that to Oklahoma City.
No.
And coincidentally, go to game five, Wemby looked like a 6'5 player who couldn't hit a three. And that's what Oklahoma City's ability is and capabilities are to San Antonio. So I find it interesting how they've kind of taken turns making the other look so inept. And it's odd to have that go back and forth. And then you get to a game seven and it's like, is that what's going to happen here? Or are we going to get the game one classic because it's for all the marbles?
That's what you're hoping. I think it also goes to... how much respect, you know, Dirt makes fun of coaching at times. This is where you see the coaching because they are in.
I think this whole series has shown this is where you see coaching.
Yeah. And the slightest tweaks or adjustments of, you know, how are we going to go? Okay. When Wemby catches the ball on this, you know, particular spot on the floor, are we going to blitz him?
Mm-hmm.
Are we just going to gap up, try to make it look like a zone where he doesn't have anywhere to go, get the ball out of his hands? What do we want to do? And it changes slightly here. The biggest thing that changes that no NBA team has an adequate defense for is multiple guys shooting threes effectively. You cannot cover both corners and top of the key,
right?
If they spread you out and multiple guys are shooting threes effectively,
yeah,
there's nothing an NBA team can do to neutralize that.
I'm doing this from a weirdly pro basketball fan standpoint. I think it's going to be a great game seven,
and I hope both teams have multiple guys that knock down shots.
Like if it ends up being a double digit win for Oklahoma City, for argument's sake,
yeah,
I think it's a. It is a down to the wire, and
they hit free throws late, and it's one
of
those.
And the Spurs go cold in the last 2 minutes, and Oklahoma City gets a couple shots, and now they're
fouling.
It's
a 5-8 point game most of the way, and they end up winning by 13 because, desperation at the end.
And that's what I think is – that's what I would say is most likely to happen. Now, what's the side you want to bet?
If I was going to lay money, I think there's more value on the Spurs money line.
Oh, the value is definitely on the Spurs money line here.
Yeah.
So you're confident in the Spurs, or are you just going for value? Like, where's your confidence meter, I guess? Take gambling away. Where's your confidence meter on one side versus the other? Because I'm leaning Spurs, but I've been so wrong in this series that I feel stupid even suggesting what side I feel. I bet the Thunder last night.
If I was going to bet, I think I would bet on the Spurs, but it's probably more looking for the value. I really don't have a good feel. Just like you, I don't have a good feel for this.
Okay.
I might live bet this. Let me see the first quarter and what goes on. Does Wemby come out and look like I'm going to own everything? Or does SGA, they come up with some little wrinkle and he gets a little bit more space? What's the whistle like in this game?
Game sevens, it doesn't feel like you get a lot of whistle.
You don't.
It's a pretty physical, brutal game.
I got to go.
Who the refs are?
Who the refs are.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell me who the refs are. I'm going to tell you right now, Swag, I don't know who calls the most fouls and what their record is in the game sevens. What I would say on this is, though, like, where do you lean on Wemby having a good to great game versus a mediocre game to his standards? If you think it is truly going to continue to be a great, not so good, great, not so good, you kind of have to ride the wave. I have a very hard time thinking we're going to see Game 5 Wemby in Game 7. Now, Game 7s can be funky. I was reminded the other day of the Boston Lakers Game 7 not too long ago. Oh, actually, it was a long time ago now. In 2000 and what would that have been? 9? 10? When they faced each other again?
Mm-hmm.
And I was reminded of, like, truly how awful Kobe was in Game 7. Kobe shot 8 of... I'll go look at his box score. I think he was something like 8 of 24 from the field. He ended up getting a lot of rebounds. He was active defensively. But that was the Ron Artest, Pau Gasol game. They lifted him in Game 7, and that was at home in L.A., came kind of down to the wire. Boston had a lead. They blew the lead. Like, Game 7s can make anybody look mortal. And it's just, there's a weird feel to it. You remember the 2016 Cavalier game? That final 4 minutes, it was like barely anybody could score, because you feel the energy in the arena through television. And when you're there, I mean, talk about feeling the energy. If you can feel it through TV, you know you're feeling it in the arena. And everybody gets tighter. Everybody's shot gets a little shorter. And then it just feels, it's almost like playoff baseball. The one pitch, you can't miss that one pitch because you don't know. And in a tight game seven at the end, it's like, oh my God, they hit the three. And they're only up three, but that three feels so monumental. And that's what reminds me of, like, Kyrie's three over Steph Curry. They had plenty of time, and they could not get any offense going in the final couple minutes. I think the final of that game ended up being in the 90s. Like, that Kyrie shot made it 92-89. So, game sevens, man, no matter how good and great you are, it can take you down a notch. And so I think I'm more willing to bet that Wemby is awesome in this game. And there's just the evidence of the series says right now that when he's awesome, they tend to win the game.
Yes.
So I picked OKC in 5. I was way wrong on that. But this might be a situation where an all-time generational talent is just not going to be denied the opportunity to at least be in the finals and go against New York for his first ring. Could be very LeBron age 22 in 2007-esque with the Cavs, like, oh my God, they're actually going to do this? And they did it, and they got swept in the finals, and I don't think it's going to happen to the Spurs, but that might just be what time it is for Wemby.
Yeah, they have not posted the referee assignments. It'll be tomorrow by 6 a.m. Pacific.
Okay, so we'll have to wait and see on the reffing situation. Loaded second hour. We're going to kick it off. We'll pivot out of the NBA. We'll get back into that in the final hour. Mike Doc Parker, voice of Oregon State and former Oregon alum. We got a Eugene Regional. It's going to first pitch noon today. It's going to be quite exciting locally. Talk with Mike Parker, hour 2 on The Fan.